Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Always one of our favorite times every week, Tuesdays with Neil. Sir, welcome.
As always, it is the best part of my week to be here. I hope you guys are having an excellent day as well.
So far, so good. Neil, I want to start with Sean McVay. I've always found him to be obviously a really good coach. He's won a Super Bowl. But I've always found it interesting the way either he challenges or uses timeouts during the course of a game. And I felt like in this game, in the end, it came back to burn him. What was your thought?
As far as it pertains to McVay, I would say I think he's pretty much a perfectionist. He's kind of a control freak. I mean, obviously, a lot of coaches are going to be like that. And to my knowledge, I'm thinking here, maybe I'm wrong, but I believe he used the second half timeouts on offense.
Yeah.
And to me, that kind of suggests he needs to have everything the way that he wants it to be, the way that it needs to be. It's not so much strategic, it's more coordination. Something's not right about what they're looking at. And in that case, unfortunately, the Rams, it kind of came down to that, ironically, that the challenge rules prevented the right call from being made. More rules you have, the more they're going to overlap. And I think he certainly would have liked to have had another challenge back, but at the same time, let's open ourselves up to the possibility that, you know, they weren't going to score a touchdown on the next play to tie the game. There was still a lot of work for them to have done if the spot was put where it certainly seemed like it should have been. The game wasn't over. His team got beat pretty handily in the fourth quarter, and it's not at all the impression that you would have got watching the first three quarters of that game. If anything, my thought was, I think I tweeted this as well, whatever the Steelers are doing through the first three quarters of the game, you need to put them away, because if you're letting them hang around, they're going to come back, and something's going to happen. They're going to do things. You're going to have special teams mistakes, and all of a sudden, boom, they're in the lead, and you've got one of the best pass rushers in the last 20 years in the NFL coming after your quarterback when you're behind. It didn't come to that. It almost did, but Kenny Pickett, once again, is playing above and beyond what we see from him for most of the game. In the time that, you know, as the game goes on, you really need him to. And he did. The Rams didn't close the door. I hate to use that cliche, but you got to put this team away. You know, you can beat them three quarters, and they'll beat you in one and win the game. And that's really what we saw Sunday. And I think McVay certainly has, you know, legitimate beef with how the final sequence of decisive plays went down. Whether he saved a timeout or not, they surrendered a tremendous advantage in this game. And once again, we talk about it every week. It's a game that the Steelers just really shouldn't have won and somehow pulled it off.
I want to talk about Watt for a moment. In watching the 49ers the last two games, I watched a decent amount of their game with Cleveland, and I watched a decent amount of their game last night with the Vikings. And look, they want to rush four. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, it looks like 8 to 9 times out of 10 they want to rush four and drop, which puts a lot of pressure on Bosa to make a play. He hasn't made plays the last 2 weeks. Why is it that Watt makes plays every week, regardless of what they're trying to do to him?
Oh, I hate the answer that comes to my mind, because I don't want to disparage Nick Bosa. I think he's a phenomenal player.
Sure.
Seeing Watt and Bosa, and you throw in Garrett to that as well, you're looking at Hall of Fame level players their prime. Yep. And they're pushing each other to do more. I was at the game last night, the Vikings and 49ers, and I said to the people that I was with, like, we haven't heard Bosa's name much. He's got to do something at some point here. When I watch Micah Parsons, that happens. When I watch Myles Garrett, that happens. T.J. Watt does it naturally. You know, he is at the moment. He's above the moment in comparison to his opponents. Bosa didn't the last 2 weeks. And you're right. They needed him to. 49ers needed one defensive stop to get back in that game. Mm-hmm. And Bosa didn't deliver it. Watt, on the other hand, is covering slot receivers, making moves on passes like defensive backs, in which a veteran quarterback who couldn't possibly have experienced more football than Matthew Stafford has mm-hmm. didn't even see him, didn't think that was going to happen at all. It was the easiest completion of the day. If you look at his body language, the way that he read that play, he had no idea T.J. Watt was sizing it up the entire time. At this point, side to side, not to take anything away from Bosa last season, absolutely deserved to be Defensive Player of the Year, in my opinion.
Right.
But over the course of their careers to date, Bosa's on the shorter end of the stick, partially due to injury, but he doesn't do it at such a high level every single game the way Watt does. And we get into, you know, I think if anything, people are they get stuck in describing Watt in terms of today against his true contemporaries, you know, Myles Garrett probably being the primary one. We don't look at the bigger picture with him, the sense of history, and recognize the fact, you know, he's 7 years into a career, but it really doesn't feel like that. Right. And he's been playing at such a high level now for so long, it makes you wonder where he's going to finish. You know, where is he going to end up in his career? Pass rushers tend to not be every down dominant players over time. It's a very athletic position. It takes a toll on you physically. There's a lot that you have to do, and they ask Watt to do a ton. You have to wonder how long he's going to last, but then he goes out and has games like he had against the Rams. He single-handedly wins this team's game. This team games over, he has over the last couple of years. It's remarkable to see him still playing at the level that he's at. And right. Bosa, as incredible of a player he is, he doesn't touch Watt at this point. Just there are so few football players beyond a quarterback that can take over the game. And right now, in my opinion, T.J. Watt has shown the most ability to do that over the longest amount of time among defensive players not named Aaron Donald. You know, Donald's the king. Going to keep him off to the side. He's also played a lot more than the ones we've talked about have. But Watt, the level of, you know, superiority in terms of clutch plays and how much higher he is than his opponents, it's remarkable. I don't know how many people in history we've really seen elevate his game the way he does on the defensive side of the ball in big moments the way he has.
And I know how highly you think of D'Amico Ryans. Since you were at the game Monday night at the Viking ship, great building, am I right about that? It felt like they kept showing six, and then they just drop Warner and Greenlaw, and they'd rush four. I felt like they did that all night, and it kind of gave Cousins time to do what he wanted to do.
It was interesting to me because what you saw a lot of with Cousins is that the second play of the game, it seemed like he checked out of something and into a bootleg, which, oddly enough, Kirk Cousins is not exactly fleet of foot, but he's a very effective quarterback off of play action and outside of the pocket. You know, you don't want to send him out there unless you have to, but on design stuff, he does pretty well with it. And the Vikings kept that action in the whole game. He was almost taking an extra step before handoffs. That was his play action. He showed almost like he's looking to give and then get out of the pocket. They had a plan to do that. I think some of that was to try to slow down the linebackers from those A and B gap blitzes. And you're looking at the combination of Greenlaw and Fred Warner. I mean, that's about as hard to plan for on multiple levels for any offense you're going to get in the game. And it's a big part of the reason why San Francisco has had the success that it's had, not over the last two games, but an excellent defensive team overall in terms of scheme, in terms of personnel. They do things really well. And you almost have to create stuff like that. I don't want to call it misdirection. It's almost more sleight of hand and commit to it. Because now you have to have a largely immobile quarterback showing a boot action on every single play just mm-hmm. for the sake of trying to get those guys out of out of a gap, out of the middle, and slow them down a little bit so you can be a little bit more effective. And they had some success with that up until the point where they tried the tush push twice, which was embarrassingly bad. When Kirk was in a rhythm, you saw that Warner and Greenlaw, it's not that they were neutralized so much, but they had to have that thought in their head. And I think you'll see teams doing that against them more and more, and they'll figure out a counter to it. Maybe they just say, fine, if you want to act like Kirk Cousins is going to bootleg on every play, go ahead. We'll come after you. But they struggled up front. The Vikings offensive line did a remarkable job against a very good defensive front seven. I don't think that's a typical result that we'll see the rest of the year, but hats off to them schematically. The Vikings won that game.
I'm going to stick with this game for a moment because you were there. Brock Purdy, he got pressure. He got pressure against Cleveland, and Myles Garrett will do that, but he got pressure last night as well. How well is he seeing the field, in your opinion, as somebody who was there?
I felt that's one of the better games I've probably seen Cousins play. I felt he was.
I'm talking about Purdy.
Here's the thing with him, and this is what's so much fun to watch with him. He has excellent anticipation. Mm-hmm. He's a very decisive quarterback. He made a couple throws that were like, wow, they're really impressive. There was a long drag from Kittle that I recall, probably the 15, 18-yard mark. He gets the ball. He kind of hop steps back. When his back foot hits, he's delivering it somewhere. Yeah. And he's not targeting any one particular receiver. He moved the ball around pretty good. They blanketed Kittle for the most part. And he's a good player. They tried to go to other options. I thought A looked really good. But it looked like maybe there was miscommunication or two. One of the two interceptions was pretty bad. I'm sure he wants both throws back. But one of them seemed to be more the receiver stopped as opposed to running through the route. He's pushing late in the game. You see, you can kind of get a sense of where that comes from. But definitely 5,000 times better than he was against Cleveland. Cleveland game, he was bad. I thought he played pretty well. Not his best game, but you're on the road in a Monday night game. It was loud, pretty raucous crowd. You have to think he's, in many ways, too, playing at Iowa State. He's got a lot of fans in that stadium. He did. There are a bunch of people wearing Iowa State jerseys. I felt he could have probably played a little bit better, but he set the bar so high for himself already to the point where you're hearing the pundits on the morning shows talking about, see, I told you he wasn't elite. You mean the guy with 14 career starts who was the last pick in the draft in his second year is not an elite quarterback?
Yeah.
We have to argue this? This is something to debate? It goes to show, though, it's not so much about where he was when he started. It's about how he's developing. And if you are looking at him as a development project, which you still need to look at him as because he's really young, I thought he did an excellent job. There are some issues, I think, with the team overall. The lack of Trent Williams, the lack of Deebo Samuel, that's going to take any offense down. Those are two all-pro level players. Sure. It's hard to execute without that when you're used to having that, when you have to game plan around it. And they came pretty close. I thought they did a good job considering the environment that they were in. He could have been a little bit better, but you have to be very encouraged by the fact that that's the kind of conversation that you're having. There are a lot of teams with other quarterbacks that have played longer than Purdy has that have the full strength of their offense behind them that did not do the things that he did last night. So San Francisco is such an interesting team to watch, and they're so talented and they're so well coached. The expectations on the former Mr. Irrelevant are just it's mind-blowing how far he's come from where he was, and it really makes you think, what is his ceiling? Can he continue to grow? And I think he can, largely because he just has great anticipatory skills, and he makes decisions and he goes with it. He doesn't hesitate. He delivers catchable balls. I mean, again, he missed on a few. I don't think he was perfect by any stretch, but I thought he played pretty well overall within his game. He doesn't need to be Justin Herbert hitting 30-yard outs on a dime. He can go to who's there and what's there and be happy with it. Some might call that a system quarterback. I call it a smart quarterback because he's largely effective in doing it. He hit receivers that could run after catch, that could make plays, and they had some success. Not as much as you would probably expect, but a lot of different reasons for that that are beyond just him.
I'll transition back to the Steelers because here's the schedule. The next three games are all at Acrisure Stadium. They got Jacksonville. Then they have the Thursday night game with Tennessee. Then Green Bay. Now, you and I both know we don't know what to expect every week from the Steelers outside of T.J. Watt. But how favorable is this potential run for them here?
Oh, God, this gets harder and harder every week.
I know.
I don't know. You know, it's the hardest team in the NFL to bet on.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt.
I would think that they'd be field goal favorites. I haven't seen it yet. I'd imagine they'd be field goal favorites over Jacksonville, but that's a tough matchup for them. Jacksonville's a very aggressive front defensive team.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line that played really well, I thought, last week against the Rams when they got, you know, things probably a little better figured out than they had right away. They played an excellent game. Can they do that again? Maybe that's the biggest question. Can the Steelers do it again? That's the question we ask every week. Are they going to get, you know, suffocated offensively, or are they going to come out and have a pretty strong performance? One of those two things happened the previous week, and you don't know whether or not it's going to happen again. That said, you know, I think we know pretty well who they are, and their mm-hmm. magic ability is to drag teams down to the level that they're at and play the game in the muck, get a team out of rhythm, get a team off balance offensively. I think they did a great job of that against the Rams, largely bottling up Cooper Kupp. Granted, they give up a bunch to somebody else, but it's not as if the Rams were hugely productive for the whole game. You know, it was kind of a bend but don't break situation. They gave up a lot of big plays but didn't give up points. That says great and terrible things about a defense at the same time, and that's just kind of who they are. That said, if they're going to make hay this year, it's going to have to be in this three-game stretch. It's critical that they stack wins given the limitations that they have, but the encouraging thing here to really look at is you got Deontay Johnson back, and you saw the difference with Johnson on the field offensively. A much more fluid passing concept existing on a play-to-play basis. They didn't have that before. It really just kind of looked like backyard football, Kenny dropping back and throwing to whatever he sees after 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. With Johnson there, you had a reliable target. Unfortunately, you lost Freiermuth in exchange for Johnson, though, so another step back in that way. But you get Hayward back here pretty quick on defense. You can fix some of the holes that you have as far as your run defense goes. It's only going to help your pass rush. They're going to be better. And the fact that they're 4-2, you got two choices how you want to view them moving ahead over the, you know, into the quarter of the season mark that we're at. You can look at how they won 4 games, which I don't know if they can do again. Or you can just simply say they have not hit their highest end yet. And I think that's as fair a statement as you can make about the Steelers. They can play a lot better because they're still averaging 17 points a game.
Right.
They can get a lot better. And, you know, you tend to kind of think, and maybe this is just coming off of a thrilling win, you kind of think that they're closer to kind of putting this whole thing together. What do they need to do that? I think they need more explosion. I think they need better pass protection. We're seeing that. Johnson back on the field is going to do that. Credit to Dan Moore. Probably, I don't know how many instances there have been among Steelers games in the last 10 years in which the fan base actively rooted against one guy starting, but that was him, and he played a great game. He did a great job. They got back-to-back excellent performances from their starting left tackle. That hasn't happened in a long time. I know that. Their interior line played a lot better than they have, certainly late in the game. They put a lot of positive things together in a tough road win that they can build on, leading into a very sneaky, competitive AFC rival. This is a big game for them. And beyond that, you know, in 2 or 3, you have to think that there's a legitimate chance that they could steal the division off of who I feel are two better teams in Cincinnati and Baltimore. This is just what they do, you know.
Yeah.
You got to kill them before the fourth quarter. I like to think that that's going to apply to the season as well. You better get a lead on them because they're going to come back on you.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Great work as always.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.